All right, everybody, I think we'll go ahead and get started. It seems like you're eagerly anticipating the beginning. Hello, my name is Amanda Hedon-Murphy, and I'm the gallery director here at Hamiltonian. And we're in for a real treat tonight. This is the second talk ever that Reeves Wiley has given, and actually the first one that she gave was here in September of 2016. We have forgotten the 2017. For her debut show here at Hamiltonian called New Now. So only the second time around for you giving a presentation. And we are really, really excited to be able to show this work that we've got right here in the space, from which this whole exhibition gets its name, DIY Laser Eye Surgery. Reeves actually had the chance to show this piece at an art fair in Miami Beach during Art Basel Miami Beach last December, and it was received with much critical fanfare. We're really proud of that, so we're really happy to share it with you here. The sound is off as we speak, so you'll get to see it in full afterwards. We'll turn the sound on and you can experience it. But for those of you who haven't seen the piece, the narrative basically goes like this. Within this video, an unseen character off screen says that she's going to perform a do-it-yourself laser eye surgery tutorial on a gentleman named Brad. And during this tutorial, she basically says, this voice says, "You know, Brad, you're boring. You only see in black and white, and I want you to see in pink gradients and glitter like I do." And I think that you'll agree that by the end of this talk, we'll see that Reeves sees, like many artists do, basically the equivalent of pink gradients and glitter. So without further ado, I'll give you your bio. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, artists see the world differently. That's why you're here.
Yep.
All right, so Reeves' bio. Wiley was born in 1990 in Alexandria, Virginia, and holds a BFA from the Rhode Island School of Design. A 2016 Hamiltonian Fellow, her work has been featured in publications including Vice's Creators Project, The Huffington Post, Washington City Paper, Dirt DMV, Art Fuse, and Be More Art, and, P.S., forthcoming Washington Post, so look out for her review in the gallery section by Mark Jenkins this week. Her work has been exhibited in several group and solo exhibitions, including Failed Evolution at Springbank Art Fair at Springbank Art Fair in New York, Satellite Art Fair in Miami Beach, Florida, The Dinner Party Download at Hillier Art Space, and Intermission at the Pataphysical Society in Portland, Oregon. She lives and works in Washington, D.C. So let's give it up for Reeves.
Thank you for that, Amanda. Quick introduction, and thank you everyone for coming tonight. A lot of familiar faces, happy to see you here. I'm thrilled to be a Hamiltonian Fellow. It's been my dream for a couple years, and to have this show is beyond me. Get started. I grew up in Alexandria, Virginia. My dad is an engineer, my mom's an interior designer. I'm somewhere in between. I started drawing because they were really strict, actually. They didn't let me wear jeans, they barely let me play with Barbies or watch TV. So I drew movies with Barbies as characters, and a lot of them wore jeans. And I would like act out all the voices too. It was really awkward. So eventually the drawings, the Barbie drawings, turned into surreal paintings and self-portraits in high school with a healthy dose of teenage angst. I became the designated art kid in high school. So every Sunday, since I was from like ages 14 to 18, I would go to these adult classes at the Art League in Alexandria. It was just me and a bunch of moms painting some naked guy in the middle of a room. And, you know, I learned a lot there. I learned everything from, like, watercolor landscapes to anatomy to figure oil painting. Wasn't conceptual at all, but I learned so much about form, composition, color, and I'm constantly playing with those skills in my current work, as you can see. Then in college, I started actually a portrait and mural business and painting commission business. These are just like some of the things I do. Not my work at all. This is actually from life. These are just commissions. This is like a cherry blossom mural I was commissioned to do in an apartment in DC. So it was like two different sides to me. Eventually, the surreal teenage angsty paintings earned me a spot in my dream school, RISD, Rhode Island School of Design, for those of you that don't know. I didn't sleep for 4 years. Is that my mom? I didn't sleep for 4 years, and I spent most of the time at RISD not really perfecting skills, but test-driving concepts and ideas. A lot of them were really absurd. Some of them were embarrassing, and a couple were good. But I took a lot more risks than most people. So here's a couple of the things I tried at art school. And these are just parts of projects I did. Like, they're and like phases I went through. And I'm just gonna go through them. Keep in mind these are also like from ages 19 to 20. These are like freshman, sophomore year, most of these. Filming people in washing machines. There was a Where's Waldo collage phase. Covering myself head to toe in petroleum jelly. Wrote a screenplay about a house built out of paper towels. I blew up Dove soap in the microwave, which is really cool. You should try it. Calm Down did some geometric lithography. I was obsessed with white Christmas trees. Tried animation. Painted a lot of nudist parties with myself. Actually threw one or two. Bad abstract expressionism. And illegally cutting seatbelts out of public buses and putting them in other places, which I will not disclose. Sounds like the cliche art school kid, but some of it was really interesting, I swear. So by the end of... Wow, okay. Freshman and sophomore, and they are very cliche art school kid, but they were really interesting, I thought. So you can read them, I guess. Give you a second. Watch everyone. Hi, Julia.
Hi, David.
Okay, I'm gonna go through. Yeah, so by the end of college, I wasn't totally satisfied by what I had made, but I had learned so much and made a lot of the groundwork for what we have here today. I'd learned Photoshop, I was collaging paintings of parties and photos of parties, I was making prints with really interesting interiors. I knew I wanted to put the viewer in these interiors, and I knew there had to be video, painting, installation, photo. I didn't really know how I wanted them to connect, and I kind of freaked out after college, actually. I didn't know what to do. But the year after graduating, it was 2013-2014, life calmed down a lot. People got jobs, the nudist parties turned into brunches and potlucks, and I was in my first serious relationship, still am. Got a dog. I was bartending, so drinking became my profession, I guess. And at the same time, like 2013, 14, around then, was when everyone really started to have a smartphone. Tinder was a hot new thing. Instagram was getting a lot of traction. But I felt like human interaction in general, like, really seemed to be filtered and was edited down to the bullet points in a way. So I started combining all the elements I was thinking about in college, and I started making paintings about sort of the way we're beginning to socialize. So this is an oil painting called Green Screen Valentine. It's combining, it's sort of in between a sushi restaurant, a Photoshop editing program, and a green screen. It was the first time I'd really made oil paintings that appeared to be digital collages. So they were, and the whole idea of something handcrafted looking digital became very important to my work. Also, there's a lot of green screen men. I became obsessed with green screen men. like, I bought 4 suits and took lots of pictures. So the green screen suits became a really important symbol in my work and character in my work, because I saw them as the medium between the creation of what was virtual and what was real. They weren't always green, but they appear in a lot of my works. Yeah. They're usually the driving force between the main activity or the subject of what's going on. Here's another painting from the series. This is Dinner in a Movie. This is sort of the backstage scenario where there's like a lot of confusion between the process and product of the image of creating the process and product of the image of a dinner party, I suppose. Each part is contributing to the process of creating the other part. So, like, we have this yarn that's turning into the pattern, that's turning into spaghetti, and then every single type of character in here is on some type of plasma TV in one way or another. You have to look at it for a while. Another green screen club figure. This one's called Couples Massage. This is probably one of my favorite paintings because it brings an intimate activity to the digital realm. It's sort of a digital couples massage, I guess. So we've got these two cliche pleasure faces suspended by these RGB blue monolith massage tables. There's like an orchid wall, iPhone candles, maybe, I don't know. I like how there's a mutual pleasure between both of these faces, yet it's simultaneously being created and separated by this anonymous masseuse in the middle that may or may not be a cousin of the green screen man. In the midst of making all these paintings, I needed a break, so they're very tedious. I went to Anderson Ranch for a week-long workshop, and I was like, I'm not going to bring a canvas, I'm just going to bring paint, myself, a camera, some wigs, some props. And I made this little set in my studio, and I painted myself pink and did this. So... This one's called Saturated by a Pool Party. And it's basically me making myself into a digital image while also transcending the medium of video to act like a painting. That looked like a digital image, I guess. So it was a lot of fun. The videos I made are very painful to make. And this one was the first. And it was really just me in this tripod at like 4 a.m. and I had a much more complex idea of how I wanted to paint myself originally, so I actually repainted myself. It didn't work, and so I actually repainted myself 3 times that night in acrylic paint, and like I took 3 showers and invited all my roommates, and like the next day I had giant rashes on myself. Also, I was smiling for about 5 minutes while I was doing this, and I was crying. yeah, so that's one. This is another one. This one took place at Vermont Studio Center. My boyfriend, my loving boyfriend Tim, came out for a weekend, and I just used him as an actor in the video. So this one's kind of based, it's called Stalking a Stalking Photo of a Candlelit Picnic. It's roughly based on stock photos. I'm obsessed with stock photos. And right here, I guess you can see where I've trapped us together in a stalking. Like, we're both smiling. I guess we were kissing, but now we're trying not to get apart. There's this picnic I painted on the floor. And then in front, we have, these are actually lines of clear tape that I used to make look like the watermark of a stock photo. Yeah, very painful. A lot of this is about being trapped in ideals, the situation, each other, and ultimately trapped in the image. Many of my figures are confined within the limits of the image. That's an important thing. This is probably the biggest one of those movies I did besides something here. But this was also at Vermont Studio Center. It's a collaboration between my friend Marlene Stein and I. We just wanted to make this like crazy Zen GIF situation in which all the parts interacted for the figure. So we've got tape that turns into braids, that turns into fingers, that turns into yarn boogers. yeah, we made it in actually 2 days. It's really impressive. She wanted to kill me by the end, though. So with the exception of this video, a lot of those paintings were in and videos were in Hillier's space this fall in a show called Dinner Party Download. Some of you may have seen it. Okay. All right. So the most interesting part of the videos for me was how they were made, and when I started making the show, I was interested in that, but I was more interested in how individuals start to associate themselves within the digital realm. I've been thinking a lot about the way I think, and I mean, like all of us, I've been addicted to the internet for about 4 or 5 years, so I feel like my brain is slowly turning its conceptions of its surroundings from a real to a digital format, slowly. I don't know. So a common example would just be like thinking of your life as a movie, but a more specific one that's been happening to me lately is maybe I think of a waterfall, and instead of like this dinky little waterfall I saw camping on a hike once, I'm thinking of this glorious cascading thing coming out of the earth that you see in screensavers and whatnot. I don't know if that happens to other people, but it's happening to me. A lot of the time, it's really easy to decipher a digital memory from a real one because you're thinking of cartoons or something. But lately, for me, it's harder to decipher because technology imitates our lives so closely. So we have HD now. We have stock photos, carefully curated social media, a bazillion filters. You all know this. And personally, I have a hard time figuring out if my ideas are coming from a reservoir of screen images or real-life experiences. And when it comes down to associating my thoughts and feelings and my self-image, I'm not really sure if it's like good, bad, meaningless, but I'm more concerned with if it makes me more or less human, and that's kind of a big interest of mine. At the same time, this digital revolution we're experiencing, the do-it-yourself maker movement is also coinciding. And I feel like the do-it-yourself movement is a symptom and a quiet rebellion of the digital revolution. Because it's rejecting the idea of apps doing everything for you, etc. However, the do-it-yourself movement can't really thrive without the internet. Like, you need the YouTube tutorials, you need people to be posting about it, you need these trends need to move. So, Yeah, it's just, it's a way to post, actually. A lot of, I think the sad thing is there's a lot of people out there who are making things just to post them. And the show's really pondering that issue. So I'm going to play this video, finally, that you've been looking at 5 minutes. And it's basically the do-it-yourself laser eye surgery. It's a fake YouTube tutorial on how to put digital effects into your eyes. Okay.
Hi everybody, today we're going to be doing do-it-yourself laser eye surgery. So here we have like all these effects to put in your like eyeballs. So yeah, we've got x-ray, gradient, pink gradient. I like pink gradient because like there's it's kind of like looking at a sunset. We've got x-ray, we've got a black and white, sepia, blue, like you can see blue. So let's meet today's patient. Everybody, meet Brad. Woo! Hey, Brad. So Brad sees in black and white because he's, so like as you can see, he's black and white. Yeah, but today, Brad wants to see in no effects. This is kind of a complicated procedure because we have to suck out his eyeballs' colors, basically, and then we have to, like, put in normal color. This is going to be pretty complicated. Yeah, Brad, you're boring. You should see in, like, pink gradients and glitter, like I do. First, we need some gloves. Do you like my gloves, everyone? They're green. Then we need to get your lasers. You know, first play around with it a little bit, because, like, this is really fun. You know, make a couple little dances, laser dances. And then put your laser right in the pupil, and then take your handy-dandy X-Acto knife right here, like I have. And on the count of three, we are going to poke a really teeny hole right in the pupil. Okay, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three! Okay, so let's zoom in. That's a teen stuff. Okay, so let's take these cute little spongy things and soak up all the black and white from his eyeballs. So, yeah, just carefully put them on. Alright. Yeah, now just, like, kind of, like, tap them, like, tap, 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 tap. Oops. Okay. Now keep them like that for, like, an hour or so. Okay, and then we're gonna take them off. Yeah. Again, be careful. Okay, so now that he can't see, we soaked up all the effects. He's basically like blind, and we gotta put like a natural effect serum in. So yeah, shake them up, shake up the serum, and then if you can see where the hole is, just you know, just let them go in the hole, look them through, and yeah, careful, be careful not to poke out his real eye, you know. And then, okay, so Brad, you just like lean back and stay that way for, you know, about like an hour, maybe an hour and 5 minutes. Yeah. Okay, so now we can see clearly, yay! But, well, it looks like we can see clearly. Brad will be able to see clearly in like a little bit, like a couple hours. The rest of the world needs to know that you are seeing blurry right now. So we're gonna show them you're blurry by putting this cute petroleum jelly on your eyeballs, and it'll be nice and comfy, and you won't have to, you know, deal with anyone today. Okay, so just take it in your finger and I don't know if I want to give it to my other hand, but, no, it's okay. Okay, smother on your eye, and Okay, on. And so voila! Yay! We're done! Anyways, I hope you enjoyed this tutorial and I hope to see you guys next week. Thanks! Bye!
Okay, it was a lot of fun. I actually did this surgery. Yeah, as you can see, that was completely handmade. There's about 5 people working that set. There's one between behind each hand, the actor, my boyfriend again is operating this little YouTube ticker thing, and then I'm filming. And also the voice is mine too. I just raised the pitch.
Yeah.
All me. So it's based off a lot of YouTube tutorials, but specifically it's riffing off this 8-year-old YouTube star named Little Miss Craftaholic. I was obsessively watching videos of. She's since taken herself off the internet because I think she's a little embarrassed. But I learned a lot about, you know, making little trinkets and resin charms and stuff from her. This is kind of a composition. This is similar to her videos. It's kind of like this. Always 2 hands. You only saw her hands. This is, give you an idea of like the effects I'm talking about. This is just an image of a screenshot I took of myself on Photo Booth. There's no sunset pink gradient in here. Glitter, but it exists. It exists. Yeah, so I guess the rest of the surrounding installation is somewhere between a Photoshop-ish editing room, a movie scene, and a living room. We have this giant silhouette head in the foreground, like many of us have seen in movies and whatnot. And yeah, I think my favorite part about this installation is kind of when the viewer looks at the set, they're illuminated and they also become like a silhouette of the head. So it's sort of like this meta experience of the head watching the head watching the watching the surgery. Yeah, and I think this idea of like reality imitating the digital image is really important, and it comes out in my paintings as well. So, let's go to the paintings. This painting is called Paint and Sip, How to Paint a Mountain. How many of us have gone to one of those paint and sips, paint nights? Anyone? Merlot's Masterpiece? You've gone to one, Anastasia? That's my best friend. But you guys know what they are, I'm hoping?
Yeah.
Okay, so, yeah, if you don't, they look a lot like this, and it's usually like a bachelorette party, or, I've never been to one, but I see a lot of pictures of bachelorette parties, or group dates, or whatever, and they usually make paintings like this or this. This painting's my favorite. I love this lady. She's the hero. Yeah. So, anyways, they claim to be like enhancing the art community, I guess. But it's really just an excuse to drink and post pictures of some painting you did. And the paintings really do look like desktop screensaver nature stuff a lot of the time. It's either that or wine. But I'm really pumped because I actually applied to be an instructor at one of these things. And I didn't get the job. And I tried really hard for that audition. I made like 5 little paintings in my studio practicing. And you know, yeah, I might have spilled a little paint on someone's coat during the audition also. Might have had something to do with it. Anyways, I'm over it. this painting. So this is sort of a industrialized, digitized conveyor belt version of a paint and sip. You can see there's these gloved fingers painting the classic Mac Yosemite desktop background. This is a skewed and reversed version of it, but you've seen it. You might have seen it. Anyway, and they're drinking clip art wine, and they're making really bad representations of the mountain on their iPad-like canvases with fingers. And then, of course, we have the famous Mr. Bob Ross over here making an appearance, the father of do-it-yourself digital mountain painting, I guess. And yes, I'm aware that the fingers look a little bit phallic. They have a condom-ish quality. All my work is pretty visceral. So in this case, mountains, men, gloves, condoms, painting the canvas, but not really feeling the canvas and touching it. That's how I go. this painting touches on the idea of copying the image, the paradox of the digital revolution and the do-it-yourself movement. And personally, I like to think of it as how most paintings are made from the internet these days as well. We're going to go to the next one. Say hi to this lady. This is Woman Laughing with Salad. It's a tablecloth. It's a painting of a tablecloth with an image of a stock photo on it of a woman laughing with salad. Salads and wine. I really like... Oh, and also the same image is about to happen on top of the tablecloth. There's this little blonde hair that's similar to this lady's and whatnot. Again, like real-life copying the image. I like how the viewer reads the scene on the object, the tablecloth, before they actually read the image. That's really interesting to me. Also, I don't know if you guys are aware, but there's that like whole phenomenon about women laughing with salad. Stock photos of women laughing with salad. I don't know if you know it. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But it was a thing. It was a thing. What?
There's even a play on it. There was even a play.
There was a play of women laughing with salad?
Yes.
No one told me this. Wow, okay, well... This should be their playbill cover. Okay, well, I can see that. This painting is called Wheatfield Ecstasy. It's actually based, it's interesting, because it's based off of a Google image search I did, where, I'll show you this Google image search. So this is pretty crazy. So when you Google joy or like image or happiness or whatever, there's an absurd amount of like women glowing to death in wheat fields with their arms like this and like why? And this is a screenshot of me doing it. So if you Google joy, it's not totally like this, but I had to do one of like the view similar images. Then it turned up like this, but there's a lot. I mean, I don't know, if I got some great news, like, the last thing I would do is go to Wheatfield. I don't even know if I've been to Wheatfield, and it's scratchy and boring, like, I don't know what these ladies are thinking. Back to the painting. So I actually, in this painting, I sort of skewed that view. To put it into a physical plane. I really isolated each little wheatfield image. I like to sort of think of the figures as these wheatfield prisoners confined in their ideas of happiness and joy, just there forever. So, yeah, that's that painting. The last part of this exhibition is really the lens flares. I'm obsessed with lens flares. As you can see, they're kind of in the paintings in places. They're hanging around. They're at the installation. I'm probably going to put some in a video one day. So if you don't know what a lens flare is, it's this. But technically, it's when a camera shoots into a bright light and the light is reflected on the lens in the form of these colorful discs or hexagons or whatnot. Originally, it was a photographic mistake, actually, sort of like this image. Like, this is what it really looks like. But then they became really popular. I guess they enhanced the mood. And they're added digitally everywhere. And they can be completely unrealistic, like these, or they can be kind of realistic, like this. And now there's some package that you can buy of lens flares where they actually have, they're so realistic that they have the dust on the lens, like, of the lens flare. You can buy this. You can buy the dust on your lens for like $100. I don't know. It's ridiculous. So they're colorful and pretty. They enhance the mood. But I think they're so popular is because the reason they're popular is because they give such a personal point of view. I think they imitate the fluctuations that happen in our own eyesight when we look at bright lights. So. It's interesting because originally the camera lens is imitating our vision, but now we're trying to see more like the camera lens by adding them digitally. And so yeah, I made some sculptures out of resin to the best of my ability. And I guess like they really add to the exhibition because the exhibition is supposed to be you kind of moving in between these realities of the virtual and the real. And lens flares taking place between these three mediums really enhance that. So, that's it. Yay, we're done!
Also when you graduated, it was a mm-hmm. big time of change. Do you think some of what you were seeing or interpreting, the differences in how you interacted with people, could have been a change in life stage as you were leaving, you know, colleges tend to be very close-knit versus
your
professional world?
Of course. I think it was definitely why I started painting was because my personal life was intersecting with everyone else's life, and it was just a change that sort of happened at the same time, socially and with me. So I think that's what really inspired me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Can you talk about your color palette?
The color palette. I stress a lot about my color palette. It's really meant to. It's definitely meant to mimic the certain effects you see online, but it's like I can't decide on it, and I usually don't really decide on it until like I add that last color, like the last week or day of painting, and it really has to give off the specific mood that takes it from just an image to something that makes you turn your head a little bit more. Something that really grounds these digital spaces.
There was one pink YouTube tutorial painting, and it was written in Spanish.
Oh, that wasn't a painting. That was just a.
Oh, that was just like a
photo. Yeah, I was just showing like what it looked like.
Oh, okay.
Okay. What I was.
Why did you do it in Spanish?
Oh, no.
In some of your work, you use hands a lot, and hands and gloves. What has that been
Yeah, so I don't know if you were here for when I talked about the green screen men. Oh, I don't know. But I'm obsessed with green screen suited people. If you look at green screens, like, you have these suited people, like, kind of lifting things and helping out whatever situation is going on. They're kind of the medium between the digital and the virtual, or the digital and the real, in the creation of those. So, yeah, I have these gloves and figures around to sort of, they're just a symbol of that. And I also include a lot of hands because I want them to be a very first point of view experience. Yeah.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Did you say it was more a critique or a reflection of the digital age?
I think it's a question. Can I answer more?
So I'll get all our history nerd. I know that when we were looking at the DIY laser eye surgery in that moment where the exacto knife pierces the eye, I wondered if you were thinking specifically about Buñuel and an Andalusian dog, mm-hmm. about surrealism in general, because the work tends to have that quality. And was that a direct quote from you? Are you thinking about that, or is it just sort of baked into your form of your education?
I was vaguely thinking about that because the Andalusian dog was one of the first surrealist films, art films made. And so it's not like that important, but it is definitely a reference to that. And I guess this is just another stage of surrealist filmmaking in the art world.
And like, for those that may not have seen it, I've only ever seen the opening sequence, but it's usually talked about in reference to surrealist film, but also this idea of a visual assault on the viewer. Mm-hmm. In the first couple of moments of the film opening, we've got a very placid scene of a nighttime sky, and everything is very calm. And just as a cloud passes over a full moon, it suddenly cuts to a scene where a razor blade slices open an eyeball. Mm-hmm. This is made maybe in the, 20s or so.
Yeah.
And so, like, that is usually referenced a lot in like, this idea of the assault of the viewer. And I think that even in your work, there's definitely, like, this moment of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you could talk a little bit about, like, what is that sensation that you're trying to elicit out of your viewer?
I mean, I think you've said it. I think it's very discomforting being in between these two worlds, and you don't know really where you are, how you're thinking, and the digital has attacked our visceral, our eyes, our bodies, so I wanted to present that discomfort. For sure. I think that's probably what it is.
with the exception of the Bob Ross painting, I saw your show at the Hamiltonian.
Mm-hmm.
Or not the Hamiltonian, I'm sorry.
Oh, the Hillier.
Hillier.
Yeah.
Yeah. H-Lanzer. Awful. But something that I really noticed there was not so much just the color palette, but also the types of images you seem to be referencing, drawing from, as well as in this DIY video, all coded very feminine or associated with women's part of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what role is gender playing in what you're creating?
Yeah, I think I'm a feminine feminist, and it's definitely a sub-theme of my work, mainly because I am female. I think a lot of these are self-portraits in a way. So there's definitely going to be, like, that feminine glaze over everything. But, yeah, and it's also just, like, I'm confining the viewer in the digital image, or confining the people in the image. I think the females are also confined in their own images. So yeah.
So what? So people kind of like their idea of ghettoization of digital spaces into, you know, women have Pinterest, men have video games.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, exactly.
Yeah, although you do have, in the spaghetti one, you have the printed circuit boards, and fun fact, in video game nomenclature, saying that you spaghettied everywhere means that you made a really easy mistake and and lost the game because you were bad. You know, as opposed to hard, you just...
I think I just renamed that painting. Did not know that. Yeah, I didn't like dinner in a movie anyway,
it's not just the super feminine space, although maybe you didn't know you were entering the masculine space.
No, there's definitely a masculine space. I'm trying to make kind of a genderless space, but there is, it's like 70% female. 30% male. I'm not really trying to address that issue that much.
So you're reversing the wage gap?
I mean, that was like when you got art, you kind of interpret in your own way. I would not have noticed, like, that's not what, I'm not playing video games, like, at all.
I didn't actually know that either.
So I was like,
I just had a hat.
Can you talk for a second about our amateurism, just like this theme running through the work of amateurism with regards to like the paint and sip and the practical effects that you employ in the videos?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think like... Well, I think the internet is definitely like half amateur, half professional, and it's like... It's also sort of like childhood with a clean mask over it, if it makes any sense. And in some ways in the show, I am an amateur. Like, some of this stuff is really badly done. Like, these lens flares are not great. That hair is kind of messy, you know. But there is this clean oil-painted finish. And yeah, I think... It is, like, people are trying to imitate what the images they see, and in that you're going to find a lot of amateurism.
And in the paintings, then?
The paintings?
Like, they're very skilled, but the concepts are kind of, like back to the paintings. If, like, amateurs,
mm-hmm.
by and large, attend events like that. I was just wondering if there are correspondences that you're finding between the bodies of work.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I'm thinking about. I think that's like that brings up a good point. Yeah, I think paint and sip is my latest, so I think I'm going to address more of that in the future. Hi.
Hi. Being a very skilled representational artist, I know from some of your early work. What has attracted you to work more in the digital space?
Well, it's, like I said, with the smartphones coming out then, but also, I'm really bad at working computers and stuff. So, my dad was an engineer, and like he made robots and stuff, and I never understood any of it. So I wanted to make that stuff on the computer, but I couldn't, so I just painted it instead. And I, like, made films. I didn't know how to work the film program, so I just, like, built them instead. And that really corresponded with my feelings about how I feel about the internet world. So, yeah.
Any other questions?
Yes. Yeah, I think every person or every figure in my work is a stand-in for a larger community, for a larger type of person. So, yeah, they are anonymous.
And there's one question back there. I'll take the last one.
Yeah, I was just going to ask what's next.
Sorry?
What are you working on next?
What am I working on next? Another installation. These are actually supposed to be originally going to be a lot of sets that somehow turned into a movie. And I think in maybe 10 years, I'll be able to do that with all the sets I make. But I don't have any money, so. The next project is a living room and a lot of silicone. And that's all I'm going to say.
Well, we look forward to seeing it. And thank you all very much for being here this evening. And thank you, Reese.
Thank you so much.